Thank you. I wasn't going to call you out by name, but if I need to, I will. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Welcome to the 2015-2016 University Senate. Everybody hear me okay? This thing's kind of wobbly up here, so. How's the sound back there? Is it okay? Yeah? Okay, good. So this year we have a few new members and lots of faces from last year, and so welcome to everybody who's new and those who are back. And also welcome to our new Vice President, Tom Philbrook. So this is his first Senate meeting as Vice President. When we're all done, we're going to evaluate him, so you should have gotten an evaluation from over here.
I feel the power running through my veins.
That's a good sign.
So let me just say a few words before we get started with the actual business. So last year, we spent a lot of time talking about, actually, you know what I'm going to do? Let's do the minutes first, and I'll talk about, I'll give my comments. So let's start with the minutes. So let's talk about the minutes for the first meeting of this Senate, last spring. So the May meeting of the 2015-2016 Senate. So we have minutes for that meeting as well as last meeting of the 2014-2015 Senate. Let's do them in order, a chronology of how we actually had the meetings. So we want to consider now the minutes for the 2015-2016 Senate meeting last May 6th. Should be on the first page of your minutes. Are there any objections, any changes to those minutes? No objections. Okay, so those minutes have been approved as written. Thank you. Let's go on to the minutes from the 2014-2015 final meeting, which you should also have in front of you. Are there any changes, objections to those minutes? Okay, hearing no changes, those are also approved as written. So, thank you. Now I'll give you some comments about this year's Senate and last year's Senate. So what I was going to say is that last year we spent a fair amount of time talking about a bunch of things, including President Gray and Transform. And Gray is essentially gone now, as you know, or he will be gone very, very soon, and Transform is largely dead. And we can thank the faculty in the four CSUs and across the community colleges for making these things happen. So all the votes we had last year, which seemed like, what's the point? But actually, there was a point, there was an outcome. There were two, I think, appropriate and well-deserved outcomes there. I have not met Jakian yet. I hope to fairly soon, and we'll see how it goes with the new president now. My fingers are crossed. I'm looking for the best, hoping for the best with him, and a new start versus Gray. Second thing I want to mention is that last year we discussed the Transform Steering Committee, which, as you know, Gray unceremoniously eliminated last spring. Well, we didn't quite go away. We were told you don't exist, but we actually kept meeting anyway. What we decided to do was to find a different way, propose a different way for us to have feedback into the system, And our steering committee, or formerly known as the steering committee group, put together a proposal to the board in which we asked for the creation of an academic strategic planning committee, a system-wide committee to give the board feedback on how to plan, because Transform was never planned. It wasn't even a plan for a plan, it was really just nothing. So we've asked for this committee to be established that we would actually be able to be involved in a true plan for the system, which we're lacking after several years now of having this new combined system. So we'll see what happens with that. The third thing I want to mention was that last year the Senate passed 20 resolutions, actually over 20 resolutions, and everything that we asked President Schmaier to sign, he did sign, those were all approved. I don't want to put any pressure on Dr. Clark, but I just want you to know that everything that we passed was approved by Dr. Schmaier last year. Every one of them that we asked him to sign, he signed. Just want to make sure you know that.
Every single one.
And then just lastly, we created, as you know, four ad hoc committees last year. So one on e-device use, one on advisement registration, one on course scheduling, and one on the faculty handbook. And we're going to hear from three of the four chairs today as to what their progress is so far. And we'll hear one report in for next month's meeting. We'll be talking about that more in detail at that time. I just want to say that I'm not really fond of the committees. Appearances to the contrary. But sometimes they are necessary for us to get our work done because we can't do this stuff in large meetings. So I'm hoping to have fewer ad hoc committees this year and find better ways, other ways of getting our work done. But sometimes, like I said, they're kind of necessary. Another thing is that this summer, Jennifer O'Brien worked on a new website for the Senate. And it's not quite finished yet, but it's almost there. And you're going to find it to be much more readable and user-friendly than the last Senate website was. That'll be probably next month or so we'll finalize and actually bring the old one down. So thank you, Jennifer, for working on that. Last spring, I also mentioned the need for us to look at our bylaws and our constitution. They're both pretty old documents. You might say they're in serious disrepair right now. And so beginning this year, the Agenda Committee, which is the officers of the Senate, are going to be going through the bylaws, the constitution, updating language. It was proposing language to be updated, then we'll come back to the Senate itself, obviously, and discuss these changes with you, and if we want to make changes, go forward and get the approval of the faculty to make the changes. But it's an old they're old bylaws and constitution, and they're well in need of being updated and being revised. The last thing about sort of a little bit about last year and this year also is about the willingness to serve. As you saw in today's email, it's been open now, or will be open tomorrow, between tomorrow and the following Thursday. And I'm asking you to encourage your colleagues to put in nominations for committees. Last year, there were a lot of spots that were never filled. Some schools had no representation on some committees. And over the summer, spring and summer, early fall, I've been appointing folks to those positions because the committees need to have faculty and staff to function. And they can't function without those individuals. And we can't really truly govern or share governance with the university unless we have those committees working at full capacity. So when I appoint them, I appoint them for one semester only, and then they get an election to fill those positions permanently. But I don't like doing that. It's not democratic. The democratic way is to have you folks, to have the whole university vote on who you want to represent you. So I've been doing that temporarily, but please get your colleagues to put their names down on the ones to serve so we can have fewer appointees and more people elected by all of you, all the faculty. Just the last thing I want to say about, I guess, today's meeting, and we'll get started, is that, as you see, the agenda is pretty announcement heavy, and we don't have a lot of business today to take care of. I like to balance out announcements and actual business. Today there wasn't as much business, but as you can see, a lot of announcements. And I know sometimes it seems like it's been too much time on announcements, Jeff.
Last year was great.
Last year was better. But sometimes it's important for us to get the information, for us to think about and deliberate on before we actually make decisions. So we have a lot of those today. Last thing before I introduce our next speaker. As you know, I try to limit our speakers to 5 minutes each. But we have a new president, so I said you can have 6. Now, he gets a little extra time, but I just want to make sure you remember that we have all of our resolutions last year were signed by President Schmarr.
Okay. Thank you. We got it. So there was one resolution and Dr. Schmarr signed it. First of all, I'm delighted to be here for a number of reasons. One, just to be with you, our faculty and staff and students. Number two, you've saved me. You may look at my dress and say, well, that's not Clark in his usual suit and tie. I was playing golf, which I'm terrible at. And the reason I went was the Danbury Chamber of Commerce was to meet business types to promote the university. So I was about on the sixth hole. I don't understand the mathematics of golf. You know, these people are supposed to could only swing 72 times. So I swing about 130 times, so my cost averaging is pretty good. But at least you guys gave me a great reason to say bye. They're still at it, hopefully sweating to death. So when I talked to Dan, as you know, there are a number of issues, very important issues facing us as a university. But he wanted me to briefly discuss my own views, my own philosophy on shared governance. And actually, I don't have a view or my own philosophy. It's our philosophy, our view. And I wanted to concentrate on one sentence. You know, there were the two landmark statements by AUP in 1920 and then the 1966 statement. And what's interesting is when you read about the president, there's a very interesting sentence on one of the major charges of the president, and that is communications, to really serve as that conduit to our academic community on communicating the information so we can all be involved in governance and decision making. And for me, you know, I like nice, high-sounding, noble ideas and sentences, but there's a couple of indisputable facts that I'm very tactile. Number one, as I pointed out a number of times, the person in this room who knows least about Western Connecticut is yours truly. So it just makes for common sense that I consult and learn from you. Number two, one of our greatest assets, if not the greatest assets, is at a university, brain power. We have a whole collection of wonderfully intelligent people, and more importantly for me, who have different perspectives, different inputs. And the more we can communicate, and the more we can share in our decision making, the decisions will be better. I teach logic. Does that make logical sense? I quite frankly, my own experience at SUNY and CUNY, those administrations that have failed to realize that no, they're not smarter than everybody else. And in fact, that making decision making on your own, you run into big trouble, and you do a disservice to the university as a whole. So where's the beef, as they say, and what's the example? Number one, we're conducting, and I hope to do this on an annual basis, departmental meetings where you folks are educating me, and I think some of you have already experienced, and that's the Clark experience, is one, the issues you folks see from a university-wide perspective. You know, I'm a little bit slow, but I hear the same thing 10, 15, 20 times, I finally get it, that there's a problem university-wide. Issues that are just maybe specific to the department that we need to talk about. Can we solve it? How can we solve it? And how are we going to move forward? And number three, I love to hear great good news, not because I love to be positive, enthusiastic, which I am, but it's critically important to me. Number one, Dan mentioned, I'll be meeting with a group of presidents with OJP, but I'll be meeting with our legislators. So I need good, great news to tell them, because quite frankly, I found the key to political support is educating our legislators on just how important we are to the future of the state, because we're educating the next generation. This is as simple as it gets, but a lot of people miss that message. The other thing is when we're fundraising. I need to know your great stories, because you never know when that opportunity comes up with somebody who has a relative amount of influence, who's interested in university. I need to make that type of connection. So we have departmental meetings. The other thing in the information flow is big believer in open forums presentations. I think Dan just did a great job in that keyway participation. So we'll be talking about the budget. I mean, all the information should be in front of everyone. We'll be talking about enrollment. We'll be talking about the system and getting your input. Because part of the great traditions of the university is dialogue, debate, intellectual argument, and coming to a resolution, a much better informed decision making. So the key word to me in shared governance and the underwriting principle is, you know, Stuart, you know that philosophical term called the ground, is community. So everyone feels here that we're a true community, there's an input, you know, we're listening and we're acting and we're moving together. And there it is. I am free for Q&A, but Dan said we're cutting short, so I'm sitting in the back. But, I mean, we want your ideas. Also, the last note, and I think the real proof of this particular pudding is, I love pudding, by the way, that's why I mentioned it, is our strategic planning process. absolutely critical for everybody to get involved in a particular aspect or the whole process. Again, it's simple on the math. The more people we have involved, the better our strategic plan will be. So with that, I'll just leave you with one thought. I've been through Senate meetings. I'd love to be here for the whole time, but I've done it in three different ways. I shouldn't say I, we have done it on the campuses. I had the privilege to serve as interim president. One was I'd be here for the whole meeting, which I always enjoy and learned a lot. The second was on one campus, I would come, give a president's report, and then leave. The third, I was approached by the leading senators and the president of the Senate going, John, we really like you, but you tend to talk too much. So why don't you just meet with the executive committee? If we need you at the meeting, you can come. Otherwise, please stay away. So I told them, whatever works, I'll be here for this entire meeting and love to come to every meeting. And that's that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Clark. So next we have Sean Locke, who will give us a budget update.
Hello. I'm going to go through fiscal year 15 last year, talk about the 16 year we're in, and talk about the state appropriation. I can do that in 6 minutes. I'm good.
You only five.
So 15, as I talked last year, was kind of on budget. As you know, our revenues are down about $5 million, but people were pretty good last year, and our expenses were down about $3 million. So in the net, we had to use about $2 million in our reserves, kind of where I said would be last year. So last year went kind of as planned, so most of you probably know that, and so I'll just go with that. 16, just starting at 16, we had budgeted a reduction in enrollment 2%. Right now it's running at about 3%. So what happens there is less revenue for us. If you think about students, for me, they have revenue from the tuition and fees. So when I budget it, I budget to expend it. When I don't have it, then I gotta find it during the year. So in the course of the year, we'll be looking for people to cut expenses and look for revenue. So you'll hear those terms a lot from us, so don't be surprised. I know it's early, numbers aren't final for enrollment, but just be aware of that. So we're trying to contain the costs, keep it under control. And I just want to mention another thing on appropriations. I talked about this yesterday at meetings, and some of you are going to be tired of hearing this, but when we get our appropriations from the state, they give the four universities one large bucket. And then that bucket, they take $6.5 million, give each university $6.5 million, and then the balance of that, they allocate to the four universities. And it's allocated based on FTEs of enrollment for graduate and undergraduate. But it's based on a 3-year rolling average. So you know, we have 3 years, next year, the new year comes in, the last year rolls out. And you're compared to the four schools. So if your enrollment goes down and the other ones go up, your percent is lower, you get less appropriation. So you're compared to this one. If they all went down the same, your number could stay the same. So looking at the preliminary numbers for this year, which is this fall, we're down, and the other schools are either flat or close to down. So, and the estimation is that we're going to get less money from the appropriation next year. So we lose two ways. You lose on the income from the tuition and fees, which is obvious, and you lose on your appropriation percentage from the appropriation. Like last year, we were 18.1% of the number. This year, we're 17.9%. Obviously, Central and Southern get a lot more because they're bigger, so it just makes sense. So I just wanted to keep people aware of that, because there's not only the revenue you use this year, but you lose it next year because you're in a lower percentage. So I just wanted to clarify that. There's a lot more calculations behind the scenes, and I don't want to go through all that in this book. Are we good?
Good.
All right. So anyhow, for 16, that's where we are. We're hoping to stay there. You know, spring might be better. Hopefully it's better. Hopefully things don't, we don't have any major snowstorms or bad utility bills, but that's where we stand for 16. All right. Any questions? I know some of you are new in this Senate. If you ever have questions, I'm in University Hall, you can stop by. I know it's a 6-minute presentation, and you can't ask all the questions you have, so don't feel shy about asking me or come by, because it's a lot of numbers and it gets confusing how a university does budgeting, how we do spending. So if someone has an interest in it or just doesn't understand it, don't feel shy about coming by and seeing how it goes. Questions? Okay. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. So next we have Dr. Patty O'Neill, who, as you know, is the FAC representative of the board for Western.
agenda once, finally. So a couple of things with respect to the work of the committee formerly known as the Transform Steering Committee. The FAC endorsed their proposals for moving forward, and I believe they were shared with Nick D'Onofrio and Merle Harris, potentially maybe bringing them up to the board. So something might happen. The second thing has to do with Merle Harris. And for those of you who don't know who she is, she's one of the regents, and she's chair of the Academic and Student Affairs Committee, which can have, whose activities can have quite an impact on our lives. She has promised this year that whenever the board meets on one of the campuses, she will stay behind afterwards to meet with faculty. This is her attempt to reach out to faculty, because at least one message got through to them, which was, you're not talking to us enough. So this is her attempt to try and do that. The third thing is, I have met Marco Jakin. he struck me as being very smart. I consider that a plus. The FAC looks forward to working with our fourth president, and we will hopefully, the fourth time actually is a charm, and things go more smoothly. I've got my fingers crossed for that. But we are genuinely looking forward to meeting with him. Obviously, this is an awkward situation right now for the system office, because you have essentially two presidents. But Mr. Jakin has promised to meet with the FAC, so I'll let you know how that goes. And then finally, the last thing I wanted to say, this is a continuing issue that has been before the FAC that we're continuing to try and address. And this is not going to affect many of you, but any of you who collect data from human participants, this is potentially a major issue. And I have spoken to Jessica Eckstein, who is the chair of the IRB here at Western. The issue has to do with the Board of Regents information policies that they passed, I believe it was back in September 2013, or it may have been September 2012, I just can't remember. But essentially, the policies say, you know, stuff about information. But one of the things is that any information that is on a computer that you're using that's, you know, supplied by the system office is subject to FOIA. Now, that means if you store the data that you've collected from your participants on official equipment, that data is subject to FOIA, which means when you promise in your informed consent forms that you are guaranteeing confidentiality, that may not be the case, which is a serious problem. So we've contacted, I say we, but it's really been Stephen Adair, has contacted the FOIA people here in Connecticut, who said, yeah, we've never had a request like that before, which is somewhat encouraging, but still it's a problem. Stephen has also contacted the folks at UConn, who basically said, holy cow, we didn't know that was happening. He also contacted the office, the federal office in DC, and explained the situation, and they said, wow, never heard of that before. So right now, we have been communicating with, excuse me, Kyle Thomas, who used to be the legislative liaison, but he's now gone too. But we're trying to work to address this issue. It seems to me that at least some members of the board understand the seriousness of the situation. For now, what our IRB does, because I'm a member of it, is to tell people not to store their data on university equipment, store it on personal devices. I think that is a temporary solution. It doesn't really solve a large problem. So that's one of the things we'll be working on this year. Any questions? All right.
Okay. Thank you, Patty. So next we have Dr. Mercy May, and Mercy is the chair of the Ad Hoc Committee on Academic Advising Administration. And she'll give us an update as to where the committee is with their work right now.
The Ad Hoc Committee began meeting in May, and we met throughout the summer. We've examined the development of advisement here at Western and tried to put that within the context of changes that are happening at universities nationally. We've considered questions of efficiency and the larger goals of registration. The final report of the committee is nearing completion and should be submitted to the Senate this month. We will offer four substantial recommendations and a number of others which we believe will benefit the university and our students. I want to add very quickly, if I can, that we've been really fortunate to have a very dedicated crew of people who are willing to work through the summer. Particularly our younger faculty members, Forrest Robertson from chemistry, Rebecca Wade Grandcourt from social work, and Mary Nielsen from nursing, who've been absolutely amazing. I also want to thank Dan Barrett and all of the people who met with us through the summer who were very gracious, and Dan caught many grammatical errors, so really appreciate that. Any questions?
Go ahead, Jim goes along.
Yeah? I think that's inappropriate until we pass them.
Is that mm-hmm. That's right. I agree. All right. Thank you. All right. Next committee, Dr. Matt Dalbros will talk about the e-device committee.
Good afternoon. The e-device committee's work is progressing on schedule. And we thank those of you who participated in the surveys we administered at the end of last semester. The next step in our process is to solicit additional feedback through open forums, which we plan to hold the week of September 27th. Dates and times will be announced will be announced next week. After these forums are held, we will reconvene as a committee and draft the proposal, begin the process of drafting the proposal to present to the Senate as soon as possible. Thank you.
Those open to students and faculty or staff?
Yes, everybody can attend. Students, faculty, staff, everybody's welcome.
Okay. Any questions for Matt? All right, thank you. Okay, Ad Hoc Committee number three, Dr. Kay Bieber.
Ad Hoc Committee has met several times throughout the summer and this past spring. We've been doing a lot of work in analyzing the handbook and trying to figure out where we can cut out extra information. And right now, all I can offer up at this point is that we have a couple of recommendations that are not ready yet for approval, but just ideas that we've been throwing around. We think that as a whole, the handbook is targeted more towards general employees and not faculty members. And so we want to get rid of, or admit rather, a lot of that information. So for an example, there's information there about buildings and engineering, and some of it seems as though it's written towards students and not faculty members. We've been fortunate enough to have several members on the committee who are relatively new faculty members, so they've been offering up some insight. We looked at other models of handbooks, and two of these were Rutgers University and Frostburg State University in Maryland. And based on those, we came up with some categories that we're going to use to ideally categorize the handbook. As an example, faculty as employees, which would include things like HR and sexual harassment policies, FOI policies, faculty as instructor, CELT advising, procedures for moving a class, things that you would just want to know if you were starting here and were eager for information. Faculty as department or community members, faculty as scholars, creative activities, so IRB, information, travel form, sabbatical leave, university life and governance, and within that, we're hoping to include a more organized organizational chart. One big thing that we noticed as well, and then I'll finish up, is that there's no real direct link to the faculty handbook. Right now it's searchable, and we perceive that as being a problem. We think it should be more readily accessible. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of redundant information and uses of acronyms that need explaining. That if you were a new faculty member, you'd read them and go, well, what is CUCAS? And actually, someone asked me that the other day. What is CUCAS? What is UPVC? These are things that should be pointed out in the handbook. Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. So next we have our Vice President, this esteemed Senator Philbrook, to speak about a Student Success Retention Task Force.
Thank you, Mr. President. In April, the Provost established a task force on student success and retention. And there were members that listed the report that had been released. The charge was twofold: identify contemporary best practices and innovative academic programs of distinction to promote student success, and which is what we focused on, and identify how we might implement best practices at Western no later than the 27th of August. What we did is we did not focus on creating new programs for a number of reasons. One is we can't get them going by the 27th of August. Secondly, had we suggested new programs to academic departments, probably we would have had our head handed to the plaque. Other than that, so what we did is we met five or six times during the summer, had innumerable email conversations, and we established a report focused on three things. First, establishing administrative accountability and coordination. Strengthening student engagement in order to lessen barriers to student success. And lastly, embracing the diversity of the Western student body, both resident and community. So this report has been submitted. The task force no longer exists. And now it's in the office of the provost. And if I understand correctly, she will be holding some town meetings in the foreseeable future, and we can address questions then.
Next. And also she'll come back and talk to the Senate about what's going to happen next, right? Thank you, Tom. Any questions for Tom? Okay, so next we have Keith, is it Govin? Is that your last name? Govin? And Keith is the new registrar, and if you haven't met him, obviously meet him now. And I asked him to come in and speak to us briefly about a policy change that occurred last year that a lot of faculty, it turns out that some faculty came to me with concerns about. And the change has to do with the withdrawal deadline for students without penalty. So Keith's going to talk about the policy and go from there.
Thank you, Dr. Barrett. First of all, I think I can give Dr. Clark a run for his money when it comes to being not knowing much about Western. I've only been here a month longer than he has. I do come to Western with about 24 years of experience in higher ed, and I come from Post University. I'm looking forward to working with everybody. The withdrawal policy, and that seems to be a hot topic. I arrived in June, and shortly after, I would say mid-July, we started getting a couple phone calls about what is this policy, why is the date where it is. And again, like Dr. Barrett said, it was implemented last year, and the whole intent was to bring it in line with the current policy with stopped attending. Currently, you can issue a stopped attending grade on your final grade roster, and that, by doing so, the student receives a W. So a student can stop attending and receive a W, but a student can't come up to the office and withdraw from the class.
Do you all know what the change was, by the way?
No.
Okay, so if you would mind
starting with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Previously, the policy was that the student can withdraw from a class up to the end of the 10th week of the semester without penalty. That was student-initiated withdrawal. There was also a policy that said that a student could be withdrawn from the faculty all the way up to the end of the semester when their faculty member issues an SA, a stopped attending grade, what I would call a faculty-initiated withdrawal. The problem is that a faculty member can initiate that withdrawal all the way to the end of the semester, whereas a student only had till the end of the 10th week to withdraw from the class. So it was almost in the advantage of the student. They had a 50-50 chance after the 10th week to stop attending and get a W or stop attending and get an earned grade. So the idea came about that the students who really wanted to do the right thing come up and withdraw themselves from the class rather than wait to take that chance, the opportunity to have the opportunity to actually withdraw from the class up until the day before finals begin. So that's where the thinking came in with that policy. And I don't want to take up much of your time, but I do understand from, again, from other faculty members that it is an issue. And what I'd like to do is set up, or I've already set up, two classrooms, one on West Side and one on Midtown, to really discuss it further with you guys on a more intimate basis, and also include more faculty into the discussion next week, if nobody has any objections to that. And I know I might have a couple seconds left over if anyone has any quick questions. I tried to make it last to 5 minutes, so I wouldn't get any questions.
Senator Schlicht.
So are you saying next week you're going to be holding two open forums to discuss this policy?
Yes, sir.
Do you have the dates and times set on those?
Wednesday on Midtown, and then Thursday it will be on West Side, both of which I believe I scheduled 3 or 3:30, but I'll have Kathy up in Chuck's office send out an email to all the faculty so everybody will be aware of that.
Thank you.
The place as well.
Any more questions? Okay. Thank you, Keith. Are there any other announcements that we haven't already covered? Okay, so hearing none, we have no unfinished business from last year. Let's go on to our new business then. And the first item here is a proposed BA in digital and interactive media, which J.C. Barone, who I think I saw walk in, is going to talk to us about.
Thank you, Dr. President, senators, distinguished guests. I'm happy to see this on the agenda. The BA in Digital and Interactive Media Arts is an interdisciplinary and new exciting degree. I'm thrilled to see it being considered for Bressford. I'd like to entertain any questions you may have.
Well, first, we need a motion to approve this degree. Okay, we have an approval. Motion and second. Rosenthal.
Rosenthal. Who was the second?
It doesn't matter.
That's right. Sorry.
You want to tell us anything more about it? Why the degree is being proposed?
It represents basically what's happening in our society, and it's the combination of media, computer science, and art. Basically, society right now. I'm glad to see it come to Western.
It looks great.
Senator Skiman.
Do you have any projected enrollment figures? Projected enrollment, like how many students you think you're expecting to be enrolled in that particular program?
I don't have that information. Maybe Missy can enlighten us.
I can tell you that we modeled the budget on 20 a year to get started with this program. We anticipate it will be larger than that once it gets rolling because there are two specialties, one more computer science option and one more media production option.
Yep.
So there's a lot of room to grow in both areas. So the best we started with the budget just for the minimum. Which we make money on that.
Any other questions? Okay, given this is a policy change, we need to wait and come back in October and we'll vote on the resolution at that time. So can we see you next month?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The second new proposal, or proposal for a new degree, this is a BA in Applied Computing. And so Dr. Gonchar is going to talk to us about this proposal.
Thank you. I would say a few words about the history of that, so that it is better understandable. After a program review which ended at the end of 1913, we decided that, well, the result of this program review was that we have to make some changes in our program, which then was program BA in Computer Science. It was also prompted by requests by students to transform our degree from BS in Computer Science. And so we made these changes through the years after 2013, and our program became BS in computer science. However, computer science is a discipline for which there are recommendations, national and international recommendations, quite precise recommendations. And in order for our degree, we intend to go through accreditation as well. And so our degree involves quite a lot of mathematics, mathematical foundations of computer science, which are certainly necessary for the students who would like to continue with further work in computer science after graduation with going to graduate studies. But this makes it quite difficult for some of our students who are good in the practical aspects to successfully finish the degree. And so we thought that a good way to resolve this was to offer another degree that will have less theoretical material, but more practical work, and we decided that we will have concentrations that will correspond to what is necessary for the industry and what are the interests of the students. And so you have seen the proposal, and I hope that you will see the value of it and will approve it.
Can I get a motion to approve, please? Senator Rosenthal. We have a second. Are there any questions, discussion, debate, etc.? Senator Kristoff.
I just had a question about the title of the program, applied computing. Could it be applied computer science or no? To me, the word computing reminds me of scientific computing, which is an area of applied math. And I'm just wondering whether
This term is not an established term. Computer science is an established term. Applied computing, we decided to offer this title to distinguish from a theoretical computing. And so, again, if you look at the content, we're trying to have these special interests of the students incorporated. And they are always about applications of computing, not necessarily the whole area of computer science. So I believe that applied computing is a better title than applied computer science.
Any further questions? Okay, so once again, we have to wait until October to vote on this, and so we'll see you again in October. Thank you very much. Lastly, it's been a report from the Institute for Financial Literacy that was submitted last year's report. You have it in the email. If there are questions that you have, please contact Elise Sulkowski directly. She's at the Ansel School. Is there any other new business? Okay. The evaluation forms for the Vice President are on the way out over here. Otherwise, we are adjourned. Thank you.